Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
If you enjoy this story, the author does his own narrations over on his channel. Check it out on the top of the description below. The Hidden Islands of Cornwall. Preliminary research, interview and video footage analysis. Philip Sasbo was, for want of a better phrase, a real piece of work. In interviewing Bryce Thomas, those are his exact words regarding his childhood friend. From what Bryce told me about him, he was right. Yeah, we didn't grow up in the nicest of places. We had it rough, more than most though. Couldn't help but like him though. We had history. Bryce described the lifestyle of the late Sabs to me in painstaking detail, from his crimes to his family. I was subject to intricate details about Philip Sasbo's life that I wasn't entirely certain were relevant to my investigation, most of which have been omitted from my write-up of Bryce's words. He never did me no harm, let's get that straight, but the man was a psycho, unstable, cut a guy's finger off once, sold all sorts of stuff too. Started when we were teenagers. He got in with some older bloke who was dealing, and that was it. Was the best chance he had, I guess. Single Polish mum who got knocked up by a gypsy. Then he got orphaned in a car crash, got raised by his godfather. He was like a real old guard of proper Cockney thugs, reformed and cleaned, but still hard as nails. You ever seen Lockstock? I told him I hadn't, to which he started talking about how Philip's godfather acted in a way that was reminiscent of a character from the movie Lockstock and Two Smoking Barrels. Bryce later explained how he lost contact with and subsequently got back in contact with Philip. The way things was going for him, I didn't want to get dragged into it. I drive lorries, suits me just fine. I wanted a normal job. He found me on Facebook a few years after we last spoke because he wanted me to look into something with him. I thought he wanted me to smuggle some stuff over the channel or something, because that's one of my routes, so I told him I wasn't interested. I've been asked to smuggle things a lot. Even got asked to hide some girls in my lorry one time. Called the police and the sicko who asked. I'm getting off topic. Sorry. Anyway, Sab started going on about how it would be just like old times and that. Talking about when we were kids and we used to watch that ghost hunting program on TV. Finally, we were heading towards having a conversation about the intended topic. I asked for more information about the nature of what Philip revealed to Bryce prior to them reuniting in person. He never really let on, but I figured it would be alright to catch up. To be honest, I didn't really give a damn. When we were kids, we'd explore the woods looking for ghosts and that, but to me, it was just a bit of fun. I think he held on to ghost stories a bit too much, because of his mum though. It was a big thing for him, like, I think his mum always used to tell him Polish ghost stories and stuff before she died. I was intrigued by the way Bryce described Philip's perspective. I mentioned that I'd like to have an interview with Sabo himself, and that it was a shame he was no longer able to tell the story in his own words. Bryce and I made some more small talk before I inevitably asked about their final ghost hunting venture. I asked Bryce when Philip finally told him about what he had planned for the trip. See, that's the thing. He didn't really know exactly what we were getting into. When I actually met up with him again, he told me about this Cornish fisherman that he'd somehow knew of. He was going on and on about him. No idea how they met. But, according to Sabs, this chap was saying that there were ghost islands off the coast. Little islands that aren't on any maps. I thought it was a load of bull, because if Sabs knew him, he was probably a crackhead who was completely shot anyway. But Sabs was proper serious about me and him going to see these islands, saying that there were real ghosts there. There were several questions I wanted to ask Bryce at this point, namely about what exactly Ghost Islands meant and the reason that said coastal islands would be uncharted. I made a note of these questions, but chose to pursue a line of questioning that would have Bryce retell events in chronological order. I asked Bryce to tell me about what he and Philip did when they arrived in Cornwall. Saps was desperate to talk to the fisherman, a local lad called Arthur, quite a bit older than the both of us. He didn't want us to film him, but I snuck a couple shots of him and his boat. I was pleased that Bryce had mentioned the video footage before I had to bring it up. Asking for media that may or may not capture the death of a friend or loved one is always somewhat awkward. Others in this line of work find it easy, though admittedly, they had been doing it for longer. I pressed Bryce for the video footage. Yeah, it's on my old phone. I got a new one last year. Bryce handed me an iPhone from his pocket, covering which was a thick, presumably waterproof case. He was obviously prepared to give it to me prior to the interview. It didn't have a password on it, something that Bryce may have done in anticipation for this moment. Never got around to selling it, so you can borrow it to get the footage. I have it on my laptop too. It's all in bits though. Oh, and for the record, yeah, I only kept it in case the police asked about what happened. Not sure if they'd believe me, but, you know, I don't know. Arthur told the police he fell off the boat, but if they ever came and started blaming me, I'd have something to show them. Unsure of how to approach the topic, I decided it best not to ask exactly how Philip had passed away. Instead, I thanked Bryce for his time and told him that a colleague of mine would be in touch to return the phone and that I would call him on his current number if I had any more questions. I returned to the office and transferred the files from Bryce's phone to my desktop. I hunkered down in my cubicle and began to analyze the footage. Videos 1 through 5. Each video is a clip between 2 and 8 seconds, for portions of which a bearded man is seen stood atop a boat in a harbour. The audio is muffled in all 5 videos. In video 4, a portion of the video focuses on the name of the boat the man is stood on, the Nimble Twist. The man in the video is presumably Arthur, the fisherman. Video 6. The camera focuses on a distant cliff edge. The zoomed view is juttering and wobbling, then pans right to a man with a shaved head. The scene is accompanied by the noise of the boat's engine. Above a black tracksuit, a man dons a fluorescent life jacket. The camera zooms in and out of his face.
Sabby!
A familiar voice, Bryce Thomas, calls out to him in a mocking tone, his voice oscillating to a comical, ghostly effect.
Sabby!
Bryce, the cameraman, continues. What? Philip Sabo laughs. We're going to the Ghost Island, Sabby. Bryce continues to zoom the camera in and out of Philip's face. Come on, mate, take it seriously. Sabo frowns, his demeanor instantly shifting. All right. Bryce pans once more to the right to reveal that they were aboard the Nimble Twist.
Do not film me,
a rough, harshly accented voice demands. It's undoubtedly Arthur. Right. The camera snaps back to a bobbing view of the distant cliff edge. How do we get up the cliff? Philip calls out.
You don't, Arthur shouts. I'll take you around. There's a beach on the other side.
That's where he throws us overboard, Bryce mutters, flipping the camera to show his smirk. Save your charge, Sabo instructs. We want to be able to actually film the island. Video 7. The view of the camera is obscured by a thick fog, and the audio is distorted by rough ocean noises. Just audible above the ocean spray is a shouting Bryce.
Where the hell are we going? Bryce shouts. We're almost there. He said this happens.
Philip calls back.
He's trying to kill us or something.
Bryce drops his phone under the boat, quickly retrieving it.
We're in a damn dinghy.
My boat is not a dinghy, Arthur yells. We're almost there.
How much further? Philip asks. And contrary to Bryce's characterization of the man, there appears to be a hint of worry in his voice.
Just through the fog, Arthur reassures him. Video 8.
The boat is steady, only gently rocking, as Bryce films a gentle beach through a fading fog. The noise of the engine no longer provides an undertone to the footage, but instead, the sounds of seagulls and smooth waves overlay a sense of serenity. Arthur abruptly interrupts the scene of tranquility with a harsh comment.
It's your death if you carry on, boys, he mutters.
You're not going to take us any further, Bryce grumbles.
Course not, Arthur laughs. I'm not going past the fog barrier.
The fog's gone, Bryce notes. Indeed, the obfuscating fog has all but disappeared. Only little remnants of mist remain.
Let's get you two going, Arthur says.
Video 9. Philip and Bryce stand on a sandy shore, while Bryce films two blow-up rings with paddles strewn across the sand. Philip complains under his breath. Why couldn't he drop us at the beach? He spits. Something about the fog barrier? Bryce responds with some uncertainty. No idea what that means, Philip shrugs. Sounds like a crackhead thing to say. Bryce chuckles before turning around to face the ocean. Wait, where the hell did Arthur go? What? Philip jumps into the view of the camera, spinning to face the empty ocean. He turns to face Bryce. That little... Philip tears off his life jacket, throwing it into the ground beside him. You think he's coming back? Yeah, he's got to. Bryce pulls a bright object into the view of the camera. Why would he give me the flare gun otherwise? Right, he said he'd get us from the cliffside, Philip says. But he can't have gone out of view that fast. Like, we'd see him going around still. How was he meant to get us from the cliffside? Bryce puzzles, making a scratching sound off screen. Bryce! Philip jolts towards him, reaching an arm out. Don't hit your head with the damn flare gun! Bryce drops his phone a second time, retrieves it again, and the video ends. Video 10. Go! Bryce shakes the camera up and down in a nodding motion. The shot consists of a row of red brick houses on a cobbled street. Stone brick walls mark out the boundaries between each terraced home. Gentle creeping vines of ivy subtly make their way along each wall in a twisting pattern, one that stretches the length of the frame. The houses all share another similarity. Their windows are obfuscated, covered with newspaper. Off the coast of Cornwall, Philip steps into view of the camera. We are on what the locals call a ghost island. Pretty sure it's just you and Arthur, Bryce interrupts. For goodness sake, Philip grumbles through clenched teeth. Whatever, just come and film the flower. Bryce approaches the centermost garden of the terraced houses and leans over the stone brick wall to reveal a large, pale, pink flower. It has three petals, one of which is notably longer than the others. There it is, Bryce says. This weird flower in some bloke's garden. It's not some bloke's garden. Philip pokes the flower. Who'd even live here? And there have been no people at all since we got here. So why are there houses? Bryce asks. Before Philip is able to respond, the pair focus their attention back to the flower, which begins to move and wriggle as a result of being prodded by Philip. The stem droops, and the flower head slowly sinks downward towards the gravel of the garden path. Bryce begins to speak, but Philip shushes him. The flower head shimmies before abruptly launching itself using the long petal. As it lands, the two shorter petals stabilize it. It continues to jump, hopping its way down the garden path. You getting this? Philip whispers as Bryce zooms in on the creature. The flower creature reaches the door of the red brick house, then jumps with enormous force onto the letterbox. It writhes as it latches onto the flap before worming its way inside the house. Philip begins to walk down the garden path toward the door of the house. What the hell are you doing? Bryce hisses. Get back from there. This is what we came for, Philip scoffs. The flower was weird as hell. Bryce warns. What if it was, I don't know, an alien?
An alien?
Philip stops in his track, turning to face Bryce.
Yeah, maybe. Have you ever seen a flower like that before?
We're on a ghost island. Why would it be an alien?
Philip manages to stifle a laugh.
Sabs, shut up. Bryce fumbles, almost dropping his phone a third time as he points at Philip.
Would you stop dropping your phone?
Philip storms towards Bryce. The two of them muddle about with the phone for a moment, until Philip steps back and looks directly into the lens.
Is the Velcro tight enough? Philip asks.
I reckon so.
Bryce gives two thumbs up, both hands visible in the frame.
Good thing I kept the life jacket on.
Yeah, good thing you're a damn idiot.
Philip spins and paces rapidly towards the door.
Let's go look.
The pair stand before the door. Philip knocks on the door. The pair wait for a moment, but nobody answers. Bryce steps back a few paces and Philip crouches. He gently lifts the flap on the letterbox and peers into the gap created. Philip pushes his finger through to lift the second letterbox flap on the inside of the house. Shifting in place, Philip tries to spy the interior of the house from various angles. Philip turns to look at Bryce, asking him to come closer and film inside the house. As Bryce approaches, Philip screams, reeling back from the letterbox. He clutches his hand, and Bryce stumbles backwards. Blood pours from stumps on Philip's hand, splattering at his feet, and he yells incessantly. Bryce thinks quickly and takes off a shoe, then hands his sock to Philip to hold on the wound.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Bryce trembles as he slides on his shoe.
Jesus Christ! Philip jumps to his feet. What the hell was that?
As Bryce ushers Philip back down the garden path, a clang is audible. Bryce turns to see that the flower has dropped down from the letterbox, and instead of its gentle pastel hue, it sits proudly with a menacing splatter of ferrous red adorned upon its petals. It arches, readying itself to jump forwards. Bryce turns and runs, following an already fleeing Philip. They sprint to the end of the street, and as they turn left onto the next road, they find themselves upon an identical street. To their right, the same row of houses, their red brick exteriors and repeating ivy patterns eerily similar to which they had already left behind. The pair continue to run, turning again onto the next street. Again, they are met with the exact same row of houses. A third time, they run, and they stop as they reach the same street once more. Bryce drops to his knees, but Philip carries on running.
Wait, Bryce pants.
Philip doesn't respond, but keeps going to the end of the street, and his only option is to take a left turn.
God damn it, Philip shouts.
Bryce turns, and behind him, stood with his arms at his knees, is Philip Sabo.
We're stuck here,
Bryce whimpers through snatched breaths. Philip walks back the way he came, and Bryce turns to see him emerge from the far side of the street. Philip walks back again and appears from behind Bryce, still holding Bryce's sock to his wound. It's sodden with blood.
Reckon the flower ain't following us, Bryce thinks aloud.
Should we check?
Philip begins walking before he finishes his question.
Right, yeah.
Bryce follows behind. Directly ahead from a skewed welcome mat, the flowerhead creature gurgles atop a pool of blood. A transparent proboscis protrudes from its underside, sloshing inside of which is a deep red from the small puddle left behind by Sabo's injury. The flowerhead seems to not notice the pair observing it.
I'm going to stomp that damn thing, growls Philip.
You think you can take it?
Bryce seems uncertain.
Yeah.
Philip creeps forward. He lifts a leg over the garden wall, then creeps to the grass towards the flower. Philip's footsteps over the unkempt lawn of the garden are soft, inaudible to the camera. Bryce's shallow breaths overshadow any noise that Philip may be making. He reaches the edge of the grass, beside the path the flowerhead drinks from.
The pool has almost entirely disappeared by the time Philip reaches it, and the creature retracts its proboscis. It curls up into the underside of the flower. Philip raises his foot to stamp on the creature, but grassy tendrils shoot from the matted, dry lawn. They grab at his foot, wrapping around his ankle, calf, and thigh, pulling him backwards into the foliage. Philip struggles and shouts, trying to raise himself back up, but the grass continues to pull him downward, tangling around his waist and neck. Bryce begins to dash toward Philip, but the flower jumps towards him. Bryce lurches backwards in shock. He trips and falls onto his back. Meanwhile, Philip cries out muffled words, begging for help. Bryce clambers up onto his feet and sees the flower headed not towards him, but towards the stem from which it first fell. Undoubtedly relieved, Bryce instead turns his attention back towards Philip. At Philip's feet, a mound of dirt is forming. Flower stems with offshooting dandelions and daisies sprout up from the pile of soil. They mold and twist, wrapping and writhing into a womanly figure. She grows tall, her form great and majestic, almost above the height of the house. Willow branches weep from her head like a great mane of wooden hair. The grass releases Philip, and he rises before the flower-weaved giantess. She kneels to meet his gaze, her gargantuan face forbiddingly looming. She and Philip stare at each other. Philip is frozen, paralyzed by fear. The green woman looks at him at first with rage, but it instantly melts away into curiosity. Her eyes jitter up and down, observing details about this person. Bryce watches from behind the stone wall, whispering just loudly enough for Philip to hear. He begs Philip to return to the street, but as Bryce ushers Philip back to him, the giantess scoops Philip up in her arms, holding him as one might carry an infant. Her voice is gentle. Her breath carries on the air like a rustling in the wind. Wisps of a chill breeze are whittled into her words as she whispers a message for all to hear. "Your mother looks down upon you," she coos. "She watches." Bryce stands up. Philip's face creases with vulnerability, his hardened exterior now resembling a sad, lost boy. "She does?" With his uninjured hand, Philip reaches out to the great face of the giantess. "She does." The green lady cackles, her voice beginning to bear the embers of anger. Her face contorts into the unfiltered hatred that she had shown upon her awakening. "She is disgusted by what you've become." The woman plunges her face towards Philip. Rosa teeth made from thorns line her mouth. She retches at Philip's arm, and he screams as it is torn from its socket. Bryce quickly points the flare gun towards the woman. He takes aim. Philip is writhing in agony as Bryce tries to take aim at the woman so as to not hit his friend. The thorn-ridden mouth plunges towards Philip to take a second bite, and Bryce squeezes his finger on the trigger. A trail of smoke hurtles with a crash from Bryce's shot. The hissing flare penetrates his target, and a fire blazes within the green woman. Shadowed by the creeping vines that compose the body, still visible is the flare that burns within her chest. It begins to envelop her body, until she becomes a burning effigy of the unkempt garden. She throws a victim onto the ground with a crunch, turning to Bryce. "Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no." Over and over, Bryce repeats the phrase to himself. He prepares to run. He braces for impact, but instead is met with upturned lips and clasped hands from the burning woman. "Good heart," she nods. The woman allows the fire to reduce her to ash, all while smiling at Bryce affectionately. As quickly as she appeared, she was reduced to nothing. Once the burning woman is gone, Bryce dashes to check on Philip. Unfortunately, as he approaches his friend, he realizes there is nothing that can be done. Philip's body is not only burned, but crumpled from the impact in such a way that there was no chance of recovery.
Parts of Philip's arm were strewn across the ashen garden. Bryce retches and holds himself up with one hand on the wall. He throws up. After taking some time to recover from the emotional stress of the ordeal, Bryce ends the video. Conclusion. I still have questions to ask Bryce Thomas. How did he leave the island? What did he say to Arthur after the incident? Considering the events that transpired on the Ghost Island, I'd also like to ask Bryce why he didn't inform me of everything during the interview, though he could be unwilling to speak about what happened due to the traumatic experience he underwent. Perhaps that's why he opted to give me the video, rather than talk about exactly what happened. After extensive analysis, Lola, our in-house video specialist, has determined that there is little possibility of CGI being used to create this sequence of videos. Therefore, I've decided that further investigation is required. Our next step is finding the nimble twist and the man who sailed Bryce Thomas and Philip Szabo to the hidden island of Cornwall.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.